Sans Pants Radio.
I am Turok!
Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Thumb Cramps, a video game podcast for everyone whose thumbs are cramping. I'm Joel.
I'm Alexi Toliopoulos.
And I'm Levins Toliopoulos.
And today we're looking at The Last of Us 2 with full spoilers this time and no other games. Right. Before we get into things, I've got the two rudest boys on the Sans Pants Radio Network joining me, Alexi and Levins. So, Thumb Cramps, usually family friendly, not this week. So full spoilers and full swearing. If you've got sensitive ears, sorry.
Yeah, you would think like the guy with like two young children would be like the best at not swearing on a podcast, but for some reason.
And the other person known as the sweetheart of Sydney comedy. But we're going to say piss, we're going to say fart, dude. We're going to go all out today.
Well, Alexi, last time you were on an episode of Thumb Cramps, you said cunt in the space of the first, like, 2 minutes, and I was like, here we go.
Oh, yeah. I was so sorry. I'm used to being on a podcast.
No, hey, you've got the grub pass this week.
Great. I'm actually not going to say it. I will say cunny, but I will not drop the T.
Spoilers for Last of Us 2, they say it twice in this game.
Yeah.
I only remember it once.
Maybe I just replayed that scene again because I loved it so much.
You're like, oh, finally. Fuck. Yeah, by that logic, there's 35 sex scenes in this. All of them feature Abby and Owen. It's just once, but I played it 35 times.
God.
So we've all finished The Last of Us 2,
mm-hmm.
and we all universally loved it, right?
Yeah.
I would say this is one of my favorite games of all time, if not my favorite game now.
I think it improved in every way on the original game.
Yeah, I usually don't lock into video games anywhere near as much as I did with this. Like, to beat a game of this length would usually take me like a couple of months.
Yeah.
But yeah, finished this in like 4 or 5 days.
Last week, which is Alexi fucked. And I and Angus did like a 3-hour episode of Hey Fam. and I hadn't even finished it yet, so I left Hey Fam with an hour to... Oh, I thought you guys would do like 15 more minutes after I left, but you ended up talking for more than an hour.
Yeah, we went long. We went all night, basically.
And I was very impressed with how little you guys spoiled me, given that I was only 10 hours into the game at that point.
Mm, yeah.
Listening back to that episode, I'm actually like, it's funny, like some of the things that I say that were then addressed almost immediately in the game, like, you know, I was complaining about certain, not complaining, but like, you know, wondering where certain elements of the game were or where, like, basically comparing it to Uncharted, you know, Naughty Dog's other massive game franchise, and saying like, my favorite thing about Uncharted is the big set pieces. And I think that will always make me like Uncharted more than Last of Us, because from what I'd played of Last of Us 2 so far and Last of Us 1, like neither of them are very set piece focused. But the second half of the game, I think just like it's just stacking set pieces up one after the other that I think improve on like and like better than all of Uncharted 4's best set pieces.
Wow.
Yeah. That fucking sky bridge.
Oh, man. Like from that point, like Abby's half, when you play as Abby, I feel like that's like the, even though like I think people, I've seen a lot of people complaining about the length of the game specifically while you're playing as her. I think that's just because they're used to the length of a Naughty Dog game. And so you're always like, oh, is this the end? Is this the end? I don't know. What's going on? But
that was a complaint I made in last week's Thumb Cramps. I just feel like that I put about 30 hours into the game and I was like, honestly, I think the only criticism is it could probably be a little bit shorter.
Mm.
I haven't played any of the Uncharted though, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think you would love them, Dusha. They've got that real snappy quality to them, and they are like those like classic action adventure films. It's the closest that you kind of get to that experience of playing a blockbuster film like your Indiana Jones, like your National Treasure, like your Sorcerer's Apprentice.
All the classics. I've always wanted to be the Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Oh, it's my dream. I dream about it every night. I wrote fan fiction about it. I drew pictures of me as a Sorcerer's Apprentice.
So in this version of the game, is Sully the Sorcerer and Nathan Drake is the Apprentice?
Absolutely. Absolutely nailed it dead to rights.
And instead of
Sully
collecting
is
guns,
Nicolas Cage, Jay Baruchel is playing Nathan Drake.
And instead of collecting guns, you're collecting brooms?
Yeah, you're collecting them brooms up, and then you can put curses and hexes on those brooms.
Excellent.
That's I've never been sold more on playing a video game.
That's my pitch.
I do plan on playing them. I got all of them. I think it was like a couple of months ago. They were all part of the PlayStation Plus games.
Yeah, so they went like super sale.
Yeah.
But my favorite is the Lost Legacy game. And I feel like that's a really important bridge from Uncharted 4 to Last of Us 2 in that like a lot of things that were introduced in that game are also here and improved upon.
Yeah. Especially like that open worldness to it, where it's kind of like a contained open world where there are still moments of like world hopping that happen in Lost Legacy, but the main crux of the game is kind of centered around like this one medium-sized map with all these little offshoots on it.
Yeah.
And I think the first portion of the Ellie segment of the game, when you first land in Seattle, is very much in the vein of that Lost Legacy style.
Yes, definitely.
Which is why I find this game so fascinating and so in how complex it makes it, both structurally in a narrative sense and in its like gameplay as a video sense, where the first part of the game you're introduced to is something that you can understand as like, oh, this is open world game where I'm playing an explorer who has to go through and find things. There's a bit of like a, I would say that Ellie's role is like an explorer or a treasure hunter style game of going through trying to find things and trying to like develop the narrative that way in kind of almost like an explorative way. Whereas like the Abby half of the game is so like in conflict with that, where it's like a
pure
kind
survival.
Of more pure survival, straightforward action adventure game rather than adventure exploration game.
Yeah, like, as you reach the end of day 3 in Seattle as Ellie, you're like, man, you know, her days are just getting worse and worse. And then you play one day as Abby and you're like, fuck, man.
Yeah, what a disaster of a day her first day is.
Do you reckon all the fuckheads on the internet would have liked the game better if, rather than surprising everyone with Abby in the second half of the game, if The Last of Us 2 opened with Abby running from gunfire from, like, the wolves or something like that, and when the village is burning down with Lev, and then she turns to the camera and the record scratch, and she said, "You will not believe the last 3 days I have had."
And then Sonic shows up. You can say that again, Abby. Him like
Abby,
Sonic,
Lev, and Sonic.
Sonic foraging through like old shelves looking for chili dogs.
So I finished the game at the time of recording now about a week ago. Mm. So I've then spent time just reflecting on the game, and then because I avoided all of the leaks and all of the spoilers, I was like, oh man, I missed out on all of these hot takes.
Yeah.
So I've gone back and watched like a couple of the video essays, which are just people being like, is this game a masterpiece? Absolutely not. Yeah. It's actually bullshit.
I deep dived on the worst takes, and there are so many of them. I mean, I question how many of them have actually finished the game or if they're just piggybacking on other people's takes and double downing on like the negativity. It is crazy, the negative reaction that certain types of gamers are having to this game. Like, at the end of the day, I think you, Alexi, and you and Angus definitely got more out of the narrative than I do. Like, I really enjoy the game, but I definitely think it is just a game. It's a very good one, but it is absolutely a video game, you know, through and through. And I don't think is as groundbreaking as some extremely positive reviews have been. But like, I also say like to someone that is having such a negative reaction to this game because, you know, you play as like a character who you are kind of conditioned to hating by the time you start playing as her midway through the game. Like, I think that's bold. And I also like, if you don't like it, it's just like, oh, this is a thing that didn't gel with you. You don't need to record a fucking 50-minute long video essay. Like the first in my first video, I will explore the lies and deception that Naughty Dog bestowed upon this, which will go down in history in one of the most damaging disservices to the gaming community of all time. It's just like,
good Lord.
It's just a game.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes both ways. Like to someone saying that this is like this, like, you know, insanely revolutionary piece of media, it's just a game. But also to anyone saying like it is fucking, you know, ruining gamer culture or I don't know, like it is just a game. You don't have to play it.
I think that all of this backlash, I mean, this is the second time this has fucking happened to me because it was right amongst it with the Last Jedi stuff as well, which is almost beat for beat exactly the same criticism. So they've wrecked a franchise, they've showed no respect for the fans, the characters that I've grown up with.
Yeah.
They wouldn't act like this. They'd just be tough men. And then when, like, this chick comes, they'd just, like, help them or whatever. But then, like, they'd just continue to be tough. They wouldn't fucking die or be cunts. That's all I'm saying.
Joel's head is way stronger than a golf club, bro.
I think that part of this problem is like this wider problem in fandoms and people that consume media. In like the last decades, I think people that consider themselves fans of things have been able to like really, because of like the way media is like brought out to us now, able to really like curate their consumption of media to going like, I like what I like and I don't challenge my... challenge what my taste is, and I don't challenge what I bring into my intake of art and creativity and media. It's just like what I like. And so, you know, and it's because like, you know, there's a monoculture right now as far as popular culture goes. So a lot of people do go see 5 movies a year, and that's not strange. That's normal. But if you're only seeing 5 movies a year, chances are it's just going to be Marvel. It's just going to be Star Wars and maybe one other blockbuster that you chuck in a year. And so I think that...
Gemini Man.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to see Ang Lee's Gemini Man. You got to go see the latest Ang Lee flick in the cinemas.
Yeah.
And that's not challenging you in any way.
Can
that's
we
just
start
conforming.
A podcast called Gemini Man?
We just watched Gemini Man once and then have a continued conversation over it across 1 year.
It's my favorite franchise.
But like they're consuming like the same thing over and over again. It really confirms what they think media should be and what art should be and what films and video games should be. And so that when something that comes through that stream where they already have like a very preconception of like what that should be, it's a challenge that they believe that they hold what the true answer to what a Star Wars film should be, what a Naughty Dog game should be, what a Last of Us game should be, that they can't grapple with it. And so being challenged by it, they only like go like, oh, I hate that Joel's dead. But then they never interrogate like, oh, why is the game giving me this feeling of hate? They've just made me feel bad without interrogating why. And if you go to like that interrogation stage, congratulations, fucker, you understand art. But I think that's like the problem is that, you know, we've seen like the way that people interpret art or just, and not even art, just like fucking media has become so curated. And that's not the person's fault. It's that it has become so easy to just do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also, he doesn't die a death that's like, he's not being betrayed by the world he's in. Like, it's not completely out of tone or context for the world that
he
we know from The Last of Us.
He doesn't kill himself because he's got like problems from the deaths, from the stuff he did in the first game. It's like, no, it's a believable death for that character getting their comeuppance because this world has that vengeance mentality already that we've seen in the first game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You go, Joel. It's your podcast. I'll allow this.
Thank you. Thank you, Levins. Thanks for having me on.
You want to second that, Alexi?
I'll allow it. Motion.
Thank you.
Received.
Thank you again, boys. I appreciate it a
lot. Before you get to your point, how come Zamet and Jackson aren't doing this podcast with you?
Well, here's a bit of a peek behind the scenes for all the real ones listening to this podcast. So we're recording this like a day after the most recent episode just went out.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson claims that he'd rather die than play The Last of Us 2 because he hates it.
Were you holding a golf club as he said that?
he just like he's played through The Last of Us 1 twice, got to winter, and then been like, you know what, this actually isn't fun for me. And also he just hammers X through every single cutscene in every game he plays, so he has no interest in the story. All he thinks of The Last of Us 1 is like, oh, it was just really annoying how many ladders I had to move. That's like his only memory of the game.
There's way less ladders in 2.
Yeah. And he also really doesn't like that bricks don't do damage. He just wants to run around the game, just throw bricks, and that's his way to play, but because that's just a stun weapon, he's got no time for it. Zamet will play it, but he is too busy doing like 30 podcasts or whatever he does. Or, I don't know, sitting at home, hanging out with his fiance, I guess.
Guys, we don't know what Zamet does. We're all friends with him and we don't know what he does.
Yeah, well, I know that occasionally he spends his time between...
Hey, he pays me money. That's all that's important.
Yeah, he's my boss, dude, so I'll do whatever.
He splits his time pretty evenly between hanging out with his fiance, scrolling through the eShop on the Switch and buying like 10 games for under $20. And
no, that's under $5, dude.
Yeah. Oh, no, I meant all 10 games collectively $20. Yeah. And the third thing he does is go to where our new studio is being built and just stand there with his hands on his hips and be like, I don't know how to help. And then goes home. It's good.
Good day.
So, yeah, I just didn't want to spoil the game for Zamet, even though he's gone out of his way to spoil it for himself. He also saw a review that gave it a 6.5, and he was like, finally, someone's having like a really measured take. And I was like, no, a 6.5 is like a secret zero when you're talking about this game.
It's so funny how gaming criticism like scores, like they're so meaningless. It's like 10 means, yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then like 6 is like, oh, it's the worst game ever made.
Anything below an 8, you're not like, you're not going to pay attention to if you're someone that like reads and watches game reviews.
Yeah.
Do you think it's because so much more time needs to go into taking part in like, you know, playing a game than watching a movie or reading a comic?
I think money as well. Money, it's like, if you're like, game is like a big investment when it comes to money and time. So you're like, I'm not going to waste it on like freaking, I can't even think of a shit game. That's how much I'm sucked in.
I can. You've played 3 of them and they're all called Mafia.
Okay, that's true. I actually would say that. Mafia 2 sucks. I can't believe I spent freaking $100 on this trilogy again just because I liked that first game 20 years ago when it first came out.
Which is getting remastered and you're excited to play it again.
Yeah, it's going to be dog shit. I know now, having played Mafia 2, there's no way that game's going to be good. And I spent 100 beans on it.
Yeah, hey, Alexi, if it makes you feel any better, I have The Godfather on Nintendo Wii that I'm pretty sure I spent $80 on.
The Black Hand Edition, as I know it to be called on the Wii.
Yes.
The only game where you can actually feel the vibrations peter out as you strangle a character.
Yes!
Super cool.
I wrote an essay on The Godfather video game at film school, if you can't tell.
That's amazing.
I'm so glad I brought that up, because it's crazy.
That's a great tidbit.
It's one of the craziest games to ever exist, and it's actually okay.
What did you get for that essay?
I 6.5. Got a word of warning. I got a word of warning saying, what the fuck are you doing here, dude? Why do you come to film school? You're going to write a Godfather video game essay, dude, okay?
You should be going to video game school. Like,
dear Alexi, what is a Wiimote?
Everyone else is writing about mise-en-scene. You're writing about Wiimotes, dude. What is that?
So what I was originally going to say was, on the back of what Alexi said about how people are so used to consuming, I guess, pretty similar stories where the hero is the hero. And like, I like Marvel movies. I know we all do.
Yes.
They're fun. But, like, they're dumb. I like them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can see my MCU collection right there at the top of my head.
Oh, that's beautiful, Alexi.
It holds the Tesseract in the Blu-ray box set.
Just FYI, Alexi, I sold both of my MCU Blu-ray collections for $300 each.
Yeah,
last
I'm
year.
Actually Jesus I'm selling Christ. That. I'm selling that for sure. If anyone listening to Thumb Cramps in Australia wants to buy, I'll set it at $300 as well. It's MCU Phase 1. It's a now out of print deluxe box set that comes in a giant briefcase with like folders and stuff. It's
Alexi
got
3D is passionately
Blu-rays.
Saying this while waving a little R2-D2 at the screen. Where did that even come from?
My little fidget spinner. I just got my little R2-D2 toy in my hand. I will never sell this fella. He's my oldest friend.
I got here.
And I say beep boop to this fella.
I'll play with my Guy Fieri Funko Pop. My oldest friend.
But yeah, hit me up, Thumb Cramps listeners, if you want my MCU out of print box set of the MCU Complete Phase 1. It comes in a briefcase. It's got a Tesseract that lights up in it.
Alexi signed it.
Yeah.
That's fucking sick. You're on Finding Drago. That signature's worth a shit ton.
Yeah, I signed it as Finding Drago creator, Alexi Choliopoulos, MCU Stan.
So, yeah, the Marvel movies are fun, but if every single movie that I watched was that, I would be bored.
Yes.
Like, the people that watch, like, 5 movies a year or whatever, that's not an issue, because 5 movies versus, like, the 150 or whatever that I might watch.
Yeah.
I would argue that the people making these angry video essays also hate MCU movies. I feel like a lot of people blame them for the stupidity of the world these days. And I say it's not fair.
As an MCU defender, you're like, no, that's not right. COVID probably wasn't caused by Iron Man 3. But another thing that I've noticed with this game, and another like issue I think that is hitting like people's brains, is that recently video games have all been about like character creation and like role playing. So when you're forced into this to do stuff as Ellie, and especially Abby, that you don't agree with, like you're like, I feel like I personally wouldn't make this choice. People are like, this is fucked. Like, my guy's name would be fucking Chad, and he'd have fucking massive arms and a huge dick. I can't wait for Cyberpunk to come out so I can give my character, like, four huge fucking dicks. I'm going to fuck chicks the whole game.
My guy's obsessed with steaks. He likes steaks. My guy would be eating steak all day long, not trying to fucking kill my friend from the early part of the game.
So... people, I think, have forgotten that, like, video games sometimes don't want you to roleplay. Like, it's just, like, you're kind of, like, you're playing as Ellie or Abby, and these are the decisions they're making. This isn't your fucking guy from Skyrim that wants to be a fucking, I don't know, fuck dragons or whatever. I haven't played much Skyrim.
I agree with you.
That's the other side of roleplaying, is that, like, you are given a character, and you must play the role, and you must put yourself in the empathetic position of playing this character. And I think that people forget that side of video games as well. Where, like you're saying, after all this customization. So I really, I don't know. That's something that sits with me too.
Yeah, I loved Abby's story. I think I actually prefer that half of the game to the first, to the point where we went back to Ellie, especially after, like, you know, you think Abby is straight up going to kill Dina and Ellie. Like, I genuinely thought that was what was going to happen when they finally returned to that scene. And then Lev stops Abby from doing it. And then I was like, okay, Abby has understood that she needs to end the circle of violence by not being violent. Great. So then when Ellie, who now has this, like, you know, for this world, as perfect life as you can possibly get, you know, you have a kid, someone that you love, that you live with, and when she throws it away, knowing that, like, she'll probably lose everything in the process, like, I was so angry. I was just like, no, don't make me do this. Don't make me do this. And then, you forget about that because you're playing, you know, you're returning to the game, which, you know, I feel like so few of the podcasts and reviews that I read actually mention how fun this game is to play. And so you quickly forget, like, oh, you know, Ellie's made this horrible decision that I would never, ever do if I were in her shoes. Oh, but then you're like, oh, you know, it's fine. These aren't my shoes that she's wearing. So it's her life that I'm seeing. But then when you are reunited with Abby and you make the decision, oh no, I am going to kill this bitch. My first reaction was, you know what? I'm not laying a single punch on Abby because maybe this will give me an ending where Ellie dies and Abby survives.
And especially when you're Ellie and you've got this little switchblade on you and Abby is like meek and defenseless and you've just spent like, what, 20 hours building empathy for this character and aligning yourself with it. I was the same. I was like, I'm dodging. I'll hit maybe once a minute, but this is a fight that's going to last 60 minutes.
But then, actually, I have to say, like, the one-on-one combat, I feel like, is something that all the Naughty Dog games have struggled with. I remember there's, like, a knife fight at the end of Uncharted 3, which wasn't, for me, a very satisfying boss end.
Yeah.
But I found this really, really, like, the dodge mechanic used really well, and I really enjoyed that fight with Abby. I just hated that I had to do it, thinking that at one point that she was going to actually kill her, and she gets goddamn close. When she finally has that change of heart and lets her live, I was like, okay, first, like, thank fuck. And then to have Ellie then return to nothing, like, she's lost everything. She's lost the love of her life. Like, you know, the family that she'd created through all of this horror. She's lost her fingers and she's lost the ability to play the song that Joel taught her, like her resounding connection to this man that had essentially become her father. I like, as awful as that ending is for someone that we see as a hero for a lot of this game, like, I was really satisfied with that as an ending to this character.
Absolutely.
And I hope that when we return to this franchise, we don't play as Ellie immediately. I would be happy to revisit her at some point in a future game, but I want this to be the end of her. I want her to find her place in the world without me controlling her. I would like to
outside of the adventure aspect of this world. Definitely. You know what I mean?
I want to catch up with her, and she's created a new life for herself. And then I want to see her, you know, in the, like, you know, 5-10 years on from now, and she's carved out something new for herself that I haven't been involved with.
Mm. So maybe like the Maria role in the second game.
Yeah, something like that. Or just someone. I hope that she has found her peace.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I don't think I need to be the one to help her find that as the player. Does that make sense? Mm.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of talks with The Last of Us 2, and especially, I guess, because Naughty Dog have done this before with Lost Legacy, but having a sequel to The Last of Us 2 that isn't a continuation, but maybe like a side story.
Mm.
And I am excited for that, but scared based on the choices that they might make around the, I guess, negative backlash by fuckheads on the internet about this game.
I feel like they're standing their ground. I hope they are anyway. Yeah. I feel like they're I don't think Sony has as much, like, it's not like Disney essentially owning Star Wars where, you know, where you're worried about them making the final call. I think Naughty Dog, like, I'm way more concerned about them, like, improving staff conditions than I am about them making the right choice for the future of this franchise.
And I think because it's a game that is narrative-based and story-based, and it has seen success there, and it's already, like, opened so big. Like, this game has made so much money very, very quickly, straight away, that it is... It's also a single-player experience. I don't think it's the kind of game that will get too much of that minutia being looked after and being pushed in directions that are not in the creative effort of moving forward with it.
Yeah. And I don't think that, like, you know, no piece of art is devoid of, is exempt from criticism or should be. And I think, like, it's totally fine for someone not to like this game, but the kind of narratives that we're seeing in the videos against it are just so, like, it's not about you not liking the game. It's like you have a problem with something that's way deeper than the game that you're taking out on the game.
I think there's one video that I've watched I've mainly watched, like, videos that reflect my opinions of this.
Yeah,
there's
one. You're stuck in an echo chamber, Alexi. I get it. You just want to hang out with you and your left-wing pals. You can talk about how you love being cocked.
I do. I'm obsessed with it. Guys, dude, you've got to come back up to my side of the world, and please fuck my wife.
I'm so sorry that the Chapo Trap House Reddit got deleted, Alexi. You must be... lost without it.
I've been going crazy. I don't know what to believe anymore. I don't know. I don't know what I'm rallying against. I don't know what to believe in. I don't know who I'm looking up to. And those are the three things that I need in my life.
Yeah.
But the one video that I did watch that was negative was by, like, a film podcaster that I really like, Dave Chen from, like, the Slash Film Cast. He has a YouTube channel where he reviewed this, and he talked about really not connecting with the structure of the story, that it plays with like conventions of storytelling in a way that he didn't find satisfying. And I can understand that opinion, but I'm of the, I guess, you know, people like us, where we do consume a lot of media and a lot of diverse media from not just films. I'm talking about, like, we consume a lot of, like, books, everything. We consume lots of different types of media at once. Yeah. And I would say that person is also someone that does that. But I think as us people like that, we find satisfaction in being challenged by how we intake a story and how we see a story. And this is a very complex narrative structure, in that there are flashbacks and then there are different things happening at the same time that we receive in different ways. So, like, you know, we'll, the first thing that happens in the game is something that happens later, and then the first thing that in the timeline of the story as we see it unfold, the last thing that we see is Joel and Ellie basically finding peace with each other, is how we receive it as a narrative sense for us. But in the timeline, it also gives us the motivation of, like, oh, this is why Ellie has been on her mission, because her and Joel were just at the start of patching things up. So it's like, it's a really complex way to, like, receive a narrative, especially for video games, where the way that we receive narratives is for the most part linear. And when it's not linear, it is still told to you in a way that is linearly understandable. So this is more complex in, like, the way that a, a film can kind of play with these kind of things, like the way that Pulp Fiction does, but more so in the way like a Memento does, where you're receiving things in different ways, but it like it satisfies as a narrative as a whole in the end.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the one thing with just like negative criticisms that, because obviously you can disagree with the story, or like that review you were just talking about, Alexa, you say that I don't think the story is effective, but to then be like, this game is a zero is insane. Like,
yeah.
One of the reviews that I watched, it was a really negative one by Upper Echelon Games, if you want to check it out.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I spoke about this on HeyFam this week as well. This is particularly funny to me.
So it's a 30-minute review. It's divided into three categories in this order, which is hypocrisy.
Oh my goodness.
Gameplay and story. And the gameplay part of the review is like overwhelmingly positive. Like the guy gets excited talking about some of the combat encounters that he had, which then means that everything else he's saying just totally falls apart because it's a fucking video game. So if you like playing it, you've liked the game, you fucking idiot.
He gives it a 6 in the end. Like, genuinely, he gives it a 6. So, he didn't hate it that much.
Fair enough. 6 is positive.
But yeah, he spends a lot of time talking about how, like, Sony and Naughty Dog lied to him.
Yeah, in their advertising, because they say that Ellie's the only playable character.
But it's like,
and that you don't have to kill dogs.
I'm all for being lied to if it means I'm going to be surprised by a narrative.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's not even being lied to. It's like you're being set up to be surprised and to have your expectations challenged. And I think that's a real problem where people have like a trailer go like, oh, this is like testament to what I'm going to receive. And then like, you know, when Star Wars came around, I remember people being pissed off that Force Awakens, Han doesn't say it's true, all of it, the way he does in the trailer when the movie came around. He says it the other way around. Like, are you a freaking psycho? You got upset because you didn't see a TIE fighter that Jyn Erso stands in front of. It's like, are you a freaking psycho that you thought you were lied to by a trailer? You got to experience a movie fresher. What's wrong with you?
That said, I think the Rogue One trailer has, I think every piece of dialogue that Ben Mendelsohn says in that trailer, he doesn't say in the movie.
Yeah, who cares? That means you saw less of the movie and you had a fresher experience.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
I'm speaking very specifically to one friend of mine that is probably not listening to this.
Well, to that one friend, fuck you.
And thanks for listening. Also, hey, I'm gonna be Zamet. Let's take a word from our sponsors.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
That's my Zamet impersonation.
Yeah, hey, you nailed it.
I was like, been half an hour. You've forgotten. Dude's just forgotten and we're going to get in trouble.
Oh, no, I was... I actually had that thought about 10 minutes ago and was like, I'll just find a spot when I'm editing it and I'll just record fresh dialogue, be like, hey, shut up a second. Let's just hear a quick word from our sponsors and then roll from there. Less about the criticism about the game and like, do you guys have favorite moments that stand out in this game for you? Gameplay or story or both?
I mean, let's talk about gameplay shit. Like, I mean, I think I've heard this cunt, Alexi Toliopoulos, just talk about story for 5 hours now.
Yes, sorry. I love my story. I love plot.
But like, I just think the set pieces in this game were spectacular, and I would love to talk about which were the ones that stood out for you guys the most. For me, I think like the climax of the game when you're playing as Abby is the village Lev and Yara's village, which like you know at towards the end of your time there is like on fire and falling apart around you, and that was that just felt like. You know, how many games, like 5 Uncharted games and 1 Last of Us game, it just felt like the crescendo or like, you know, the journey that to get to this point via all those games and everything that they've learned, making them in one incredible set piece.
I that finale is so exciting because, like, you know, a lot of this game, you're like taking it through in this stealthy way, trying to like perfect your route through it. But at that point, I'm like, I feel like I had a time limit, even though they're not setting you one. And I'm just like fully going crazy, just running, gunning through everything and like doing like a measured run and gun approach by that point, just because I'm like, I got to get Lev out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the only time I was really like, like with the ending was that I feel like nothing hits those heights beyond past that point.
Yeah.
That incredible, you know, escape from the village, I think is like the most exciting part of the game. And I know, like, you know, it's not all about the exciting moments when playing this game, but I knew even as I was doing it, I knew that nothing that Ellie was doing was going to be as exciting and insane as that sequence. So that was like a little bit of like not a letdown. It was just like an odd feeling as I was playing.
And yeah, especially now, then during the Santa Barbara epilogue, you kind of are fighting against a new sect of people new group.
Who
and you
aren't
kind of
really
don't have
explored at all as much as the other two groups that you meet in the game.
And I think that kind of like, it kind of gives you that feeling like, why am I going so hard against these people?
Especially when it's spent like, you know, the second half of the game going like, hey, Ellie, maybe you shouldn't have killed all those wolves because they're people too. And then, you know, Abby like, oh, you know, shit, you had to kill all Lev and Yara's family to escape and your own wolves. Like, this is awful. And then it's just like, here's some random guys. They suck. Fucking kill them all.
Yeah.
Dog the Bounty Hunter is their leader.
I was convinced it was Dog.
It was crazy.
I was convinced.
Yeah, I think the only thing that sort of made that last section, like, made me motivated was, like, I honestly thought Ellie was dying from that wound.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
and
true.
And the fact that I'd become so attached to Abby, and even though Ellie didn't know this, the game kind of dances around it, and I think they don't want to go too fucked, even though most of the game is, but it kind of seemed like a sex trafficking thing at first when Abby was caught. And I was like, oh, fuck that. Fuck this. Fuck these cunts.
Yeah, and I know it's slaves, but then what do they actually do as slaves? Like, is it food production? I don't know. They don't really...
Yeah, I think, like, because they... The way that they talk about Ellie and the way they talk about Abby makes me think that it's, like, really sinister, but the game doesn't want to lean too much into it because, like, that is fucked and also has, like, real-life ties, which is also very fucked. Just because of, like, the way they're describing Abby, like, when they, like, capture her, the way that they, like, talk about her doesn't seem like, it seems almost like in a sexual context.
It was like, and this song will last a while or something, isn't it? Something like, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I didn't think into that context much.
And then, especially with Ellie, they're like, oh, she'll be dead soon. I don't know. It just felt like, felt bad.
It goes to an ickier place that these games have not been to yet. And I think that it's because it's like, it gently goes there. It doesn't quite give you that motivation, but also just doesn't sit quite as right.
Yeah, the first game was kind of like you know, these guys are cannibals, and their leader is a pedophile too.
Yeah,
they're pretty out. Yeah,
even even David in the first one, like the pedophile stuff, isn't unless I'm misremembering it, but I remember it's just kind of implied again, like kind of a gently implication, like no one's ever like.
He's like, I'll let you live because you can offer me something that the others can't.
Yeah.
Buddy.
Which is fucked.
Hey, buddy. Come sit next to me, guy.
Yeah, like I really, really liked the last part. I felt that it was very similar to the end of the first game, but I think that the resort was a lot better because it was a totally different, again, like the hospital in the end of the first game, it's a totally different situation than you've been in. You get a new gun, which is far more like run and gun friendly. But the mix of the infected there as well, which you can like let out to do some of your dirty work for you.
I'm so annoyed I didn't think of doing that when I was playing.
Like, you fucking idiot. That was the first thing I was like. I was like, oh, can I free these cunts?
Freedom. I would say that another set piece that I really liked, actually, I don't even know how to describe it as a set piece, but it's the first time that gameplay changed for me, is when I think it's Seattle Day 2 as Ellie, and it's the first time you come across dogs being used to like sniff you out, and you've got that like little block that has a couple of shops that are open through it, and you have like probably five or six guys, a dog or two, and then the stealth gameplay changes for the first time where you have something that can track you and you have to like make diverted paths, and you've got like this big like open space to kind of run between all these different shops and like go prone between them or slide between these cracks in the walls to kind of make your way and survive through there. I found that piece of gameplay so fun. I restarted probably 6 times just playing because I'm like, I've got to ace this. I've got to go through silently. I've got to freaking find out the best way to like take down every single one of these people and this freaking puppy every time.
And I think it's just after you get the bow and arrow for the first time too. So you can safely take them out with that as well.
Or at least you can now make, I could at least make silences at that point.
Yeah, true.
And I just found that so fun and like just like how to split these people up and do that. And I hadn't really played a stealth game like that probably since like Splinter Cell, where I really got into the stealth aspect of it all.
I had not thought about Splinter Cell in such a long time.
Yeah, it rules, dude. Sam Fisher. Dude. Tom Clancy, thank you so
green
much.
Green eye thing? That's
you
sick.
Conservative freak, thank you so much. You pro-militaristic conservative freak, thank you for letting me play a quiet George Clooney in a video game.
What about the Rat King fight? Did you in the hospital basement?
That scared the shit out of
absolutely.
Me.
How many times did you guys die during it? Angus said he got it first go, which I don't believe.
I was playing not on a high difficulty setting. I'm playing on like light or something. So I did it in 2 goes, but I was like hacking my Dax. But also I really liked how this is like so much of the rest of this game is very grounded. And then this is like, oh yeah, this is a science fiction fantasy game. Remember where there's like a crazy invented monster at the heart of it. I love that this was like this Rat King Patient Zero. Terrifying and disgusting. So loved great. Looking at it.
Yeah,
it obsessed awesome. With the look of that beast.
Yeah, it's a weird post-game thing where you can unlock models, 3D mm-hmm. models of all the characters. And the first thing I did was like unlock all the Rat King models
yes.
and just zoom it around and watch it gross like, flap around. Yeah,
get a better look in the light.
You took a few screenshots of the infected dicks. Like, because you can see that the infected, that you can just see their dick, like, just kind of flopping about. I didn't notice it in my game until I was walking past one that I'd killed, and its dick and balls were just pressed against the ground. So I tried to shoot them off, but you couldn't.
Yeah.
Worst game ever. You just have to,
marvel at their existence and envy their size and shape.
But I died so many times in the Rat King fight because I had fuck all resources by that point.
Yeah.
Like no ammo on any of the guns that I'd gotten used to using and like very few pipe bombs or anything like that left.
I at first tried to do the fight. I think I died like 3 or 4 times and I was playing on like the normal difficulty, but that was because of the first game, when they gave us a flamethrower in this, I was like, I cannot use this. The bullets will be so rare. I'll never, even though I know it's fucking sick, I'm not touching this flamethrower.
Yeah.
So when I got to the Rat King fight, I had like a full flamethrower basically.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, there's probably going to be an easier way to beat this. So I tried a couple of different times. And then the last time I threw a pipe bomb, emptied my flamethrower on it, and then shot it with a shotgun and it was dead. And I was like, oh, I didn't even need to move.
Yeah, I found that when I tried to use the flamethrower, it would make its way towards me really quickly and just rip me apart.
I think it's because I hit it with the pipe bomb first. That was the only thing that... And look, it wasn't a thought-out measure. I was just like, fuck this. I'm going to empty all my guns onto this piece of shit.
It's so great that there's so many ways that you can go about the fights in this game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say I almost never used pipe bombs or anything or traps. I would mainly use like a Molotov here and there, but otherwise I'm running, gunning, stealthing, trying to kill that way. Almost never use explosives.
Pipe bombs and explosive arrows are probably my favorite weapons in the game.
Actually, explosive arrows, when I got to that, I'm like, this is my favorite thing I've ever used in any video game. And there's a point in the Santa Barbara thing where I was like, I'm only using explosive arrows. I can build them myself. But there was a point where I was like, true delight as like a psycho game player where there was like two people standing next to each other talking. And I'm like, I'm going to explode one of them, the other one. Has to watch. And I was like, that was like a true delight in playing the game.
I barely used any explosive arrows during the run through. I think I only used like 2, maybe 3, but I hadn't used any of the trap bombs right up until Santa Barbara. And then when I was in the resort, I realized that there's like one part with a staircase and I was like, I can just make a lot of noise, put a bomb on the edge of the staircase and then they just blow up.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh fuck. So that last resort part, I barely died because the infected and then like my like shitty ass tactic of just like pretty much put a bomb, make some noise, camp, wait for someone to fucking explode, go look at their body and be like, whoa, that's gross ass, and then just repeat.
Yeah, I died a lot in those final encounters until I was like, oh wait, I have shitloads of explosive arrows left, and then I just blew up everyone.
Yeah, because they're just guys with guns at the end. Mm. Like, it's exciting. I mean, if you get spotted because their guns are the best guns, it drains your health real bad. Yeah. And as Ellie, I didn't use my pills properly, so I didn't have the 50% health pack upgrade during the game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was, like, chewing through, like, rags and fucking alcohol just to make health kits the whole time.
The resource I found the most scarce was the binding tape, and you use it for so many things. That was mainly all your weapons basically need binding. And I was like, I need more binding. Fuck.
One part of the game that I haven't really heard people talk about that much that I really really liked was chasing Nora as Ellie.
Oh yeah.
In the hospital.
I feel like they always do that in Uncharted games too, where you're effectively just chasing a character that you can't kill for a while.
Yeah. I've never. Because I haven't played an Uncharted game. I was like, oh, fuck, this is hectic. And then, I mean, this is a bit story again, Levens. I know
you're done with story. No, it's fine. The story is good. You know, it's like, you're not there.
Oh, it's
Alexi
fine
is.
When he does it. Exactly. Okay.
And then the fact that, like, Ellie just, like, really takes it, like, ticks it up a notch when she just pushes her into the spores. And I'm like, fucking hell, Ellie, that's fucked. And then you find out she tortured her on top of that.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Ellie, she's bad news.
She is irredeemable. That's what I like about her, that she does find redemption in the end.
Yeah, very true. I liked chasing the sniper, and then you realize that it's Tommy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was an excellent scene. You know, especially how careful you've got to be to get past him, because it's like, oh, this is what it's like for all these people that you're killing as one of the main characters. You are like, effectively like very, very almost near unstoppable.
Permission to speak on story.
Yes, I'll allow three more occasions.
Thank you. I like it in that moment as well, where that's the first time Abby ever considers that these people have come after her. Is like almost the end of her entire section of gameplay is when she sees Tommy for 1 second as she throws him like over a balcony.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, oh my God, I didn't even think that these were the other people that were after us. And I think that is such like a cool technique in storytelling of like this plot that they haven't even considered is like what has been hunting them down, what will be their demise the entire time.
And like, you know, as the player, but Abby has no idea. So when you're fucking walking back to the aquarium, you're like, no.
My heart was raised. I was like shaking. My teeth hurt because I was like pushing them so tightly together for so much of the game. God, I really was in like full life ruin moment in the 2 days that I dedicated to finishing Last of Us 2. I didn't sleep. I finished the game and I was like, cool, I need to go for a run.
Yeah.
Levens, when I messaged you to see if you're going to be free to do this, you were like, yeah, sweet. I'm up to Seattle day 3. I should be done soon. And I was like, oh, Levens, you fucking idiot. You got so much game left.
I did it. All it took was not sleeping.
It's funny that while we're recording this, Tom Reed from Sandspans as well has been playing it, but he also has been taking it slow because he thought the game was winding down.
Mm.
And he's just messaged me being like, Joel, this game, oh God, I just killed a pregnant lady and now I'm Abby again and I hate that I'm going to have to empathize with her, but this is basically Sophie's choice.
Yeah.
Both choices are suicide.
That's so well put, because I started the new game plus after finishing the game. Only just started it, that's it. And already, like, you know, I've had the entire experience of the game. I've fallen in love with, like, the character of Abby as well. I've empathized with her and identify with her plight in this game as well. Now, going back to new game plus, starting out as Ellie again, and then seeing Abby kill Joel, I immediately felt like I've got to kill these people in their entirety all over again. And so it's like, I think that's, this game is so good at like setting you up and like allowing you to like experience these like narrative structures in like the most intense way.
Oh man. I don't know if I could do a new game plus anytime soon. It's just like too raw.
I need to see those zombie dude dicks one more time, dude.
No, I've been playing. I went straight to Shovel Knight, King of Cards. I just needed a really, like, you know, reaction-based, you know, quick platformer to just reset my brain to just, you know, video games being pure, you know.
I need something response. Before that Mafia remaster comes out. I just need something to tide me over.
I went back to Doom Eternal, which I have...
I think that was the last game that you and I talked about.
Well, yeah, so it's the most frustrating but like satisfying experience I've had with a video game because like I'm not quite good enough to just beat it. So like I got stuck on this one part for fucking ages and then I finished that part and then like I powered through maybe the next 2 hours and now I'm at like what is probably like the second last boss fight. And look, I had to turn my PlayStation off. I was getting too angry. Like, I'm not like a loud cracking of the shits person when I'm playing a video game. I get like really seething and quiet and small. And yeah, I was just like, fuck this. I'm going to bed. And it was like 11 o'clock. And I was like, I'm not even going to be able to sleep. It's too early. But I just couldn't look at my TV anymore. So that was exactly what I did after finishing The Last of Us. And I regretted it.
Well, I'm going to send you an original Nintendo 64 copy of Banjo-Tooie in the mail.
Yeah. Go fuck yeah, please do.
Yeah, it's the only N64 game I have left, like just sitting around my house. It's yours, baby. As soon as I heard you whisper it out into that thumb cramps feed, I'm sending it down to you.
Fuck yeah. I can't wait to play it and just immediately be overwhelmed. Because the one thing I know about this game is that it's enormous and there's no mini-map. So it's just impossible to find your way around anything.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so hard to play a Nintendo 64 game with just one control stick now.
Yeah.
It makes me feel ridiculous. How did I do that for 10 years?
I got the Namco Museum Archive collections for Switch, which is all the NES Namco games. So like obviously Pac-Man and Mappy and a bunch of other like older, like, you know, 80s era Namco games and just like playing through them. And then they also re-released, what's it called? Not Dig Dug. It became Mr. Driller. And they've re-released for the first time in the West I think it was a GameCube game, Mr. Driller Drill Land. And I've been playing those and it's just so good just playing, like there's no story, it's just pure arcade, like you know, like repetition, and that's like the perfect antidote to like feeling a little not like exhausted by the game, but you know, I was like okay I need to play something completely different after Last of Us.
Because I played The Last of Us 2 with my housemates, we've also, as a whole, because the Nintendo 64 was still set up from when I beat Banjo-Kazooie, we've been playing GoldenEye multiplayer.
Oh, wow.
Don't shoot. Yeah, it's good.
Name a 64 game, and I'll just say one of the few bits of
the one dialogue they have. Perfect Dark. Go for it.
Oh, fuck, I don't remember that one at all, sorry.
Just say Elvis. That's the name of the alien from it.
Laptop Gun.
Yeah, that's the other. Those were the two references I had for Perfect Dark.
Yeah. Joanna Dark. That's the character's name. In fact, look at this.
Oh, God. Everyone, all podcast listeners, look at this.
Whoa.
Oh, wow. Perfect Dark on 64.
He just bought a real copy. He brought a real doll of Joanna Dark up from the beneath his bed.
Yeah, it's fucked. It's in.
Well,
still,
yeah, that's awesome.
Still, yeah, we know it.
I assumed
it's been
when
fucked.
I saw it. That's what you've done with it.
Oh, actually, one last thing about The Last of Us 2. Like, a part that, like, it's like a kind of a small moment in the grand scheme of the game, but one part that I just, like, was like, oh, shit, was when you first run into the Seraphites as Ellie.
Yeah.
And you just hear the whistling, and you're just like...
Yeah, so good.
Yeah. And there's nothing you can do. Like, you're like, I'm suspicious something's about to happen. You put, like, you go into listening mode, you can't see jack shit, and you get shot. There's nothing you can do about it. I think is really good. And especially that it's like, it doesn't cut to a cutscene. It's just in the game. So you feel like the danger is happening and you don't know what it is.
Yeah, and then whenever they're around, you just hear them going... I'm trying to think of a more stupid whistle I could do. The Joel Santana whistle. Someone mod that, please. Just like weird famous whistles from songs.
Or alternatively, the song Whistle by Flowrider.
That would be hectos, dude.
That'd be sick, because then when I'm playing The Last of Us, I can also think about blowjobs, and that's mad.
Yeah, that's the one problem with this game, is that there's only one fuck scene, and it's not, then no one gets sucked.
What's the one from Kill Bill? That what's her name whistles as the nurse?
There we go.
I would have shit myself if that started playing. I'm like, no, this is too many hectic things altogether.
Tarantino, you evoked Tarantino. Thank you so much, dude. Actually, the perfect game.
There's so many parts of The Last of Us now that I'm just like thinking about it that are just so good.
Yeah.
In this, that I just don't understand. Even if you don't like the story, not enjoying the game, and I get that it's like just 30 hours of just horrible, depressing things happening, but there is like a few moments of lightness. I guess, like, if you don't like heavy video games, you might like it, but still.
Yeah, and it's not just heavy. It is pretty heavy-handed in some of its themes, but it's a video game, so that's par for the course. But the gameplay, for me, I didn't find it that fun in Last of Us 1, but I just found it. I was having fun the entire time I was playing Last of Us 2.
Enjoying the exploring, enjoying any bit of combat. I think that it's a really enjoyable game, but because, as we've said, like, this is a heavy narrative game where the narrative does make you have to, ingest heavier themes than a lot of video games have, it is not one that I go, oh, you have to play this no matter who you are. It's like, you know, if I know that you're someone that enjoys narrative-based games that are challenging, not in a gameplay sense, but in a gore sense, in the way that you're interpreting the game, the stuff that you have to go through and put yourself through, then I think it's 100% like a must play. And I'm interested to see like what people's reactions are to it.
Also, just one final disclaimer. So obviously quite heavy-handed on the gore, the narrative is very heavy. But a criticism I have seen is that like you only see one character naked in the game. So you do see Abby topless. That includes nipples. She is the only one in that situation. I'm so sorry to everyone else that got excited about the potential of, I guess, more fucking. It only does happen once. That upper echelon gamer highlights this, so I just feel like that it's
upper echelon gamer really knows what they're talking about. And
so it's our duty as gamers on Thumbcramps to just let everyone know that unfortunately that is the case.
Show us Owen's dick, you cowards.
Yeah. I've saw a lot of zombie dongos, but I want to see Owen's pecker fully steamed up for that fuck scene. And we don't see it.
I
so
saw someone
this
complaining,
game is imperfect.
Like, oh, I can't believe Owen and Abby have like raw anal sex. How unrealistic. It's like, what do you want? Do you want to see a scene of like Owen spitting in his hand?
I don't, like, or do you want to see a shot going like, okay, I'm deciding where I shall place my pecker in this moment?
Yeah. Like, I'm funnily
also
enough,
I don't think it was anal sex.
No, I don't think it was either. It was
just doggy style. Can we just say that? It was in the style of the hounds, and they went to
I actually,
hounds.
In my narrative, Owen is a eunuch, and he was just
he's
slapping,
rubbing against.
One thing that, like, just like with that scene, one thing that just like took me by surprise is just like how it goes from like 0 to 100 so quickly. Mm. I was like, whoa. Yeah, they're really fucking.
I just couldn't stop thinking about...
Yeah, I mean, you're going from 0 to 100. Stop at 69 for a second or two.
Yeah.
I just couldn't stop thinking of, like, how much, like, blood she would have been covered in from the day. Like, she's had, like, the worst day ever. She's covered in, like, every type of monster that you've encountered in the game's blood and the blood of, like, two different groups of people.
Her friend Manny.
Yeah. I think that's the next day, bro. Yeah,
Manny doesn't die till the end of her.
Oh, God, man. Sorry.
Manny and Jesse, my two favorite characters, both get shot through the face.
Yeah.
Jesse, the hottest character in the game, and Manny, my horny anime-loving freak, who I saw myself
through. Both of them
through.
Represent Angus to me, which is why I got upset.
Well, how was it like, Alexi, for you playing a game that featured your good friends Joel and Lev?
Yeah, it was incredible. I was like,
hey,
this is what it would be like for me.
I survived Last of Us 2. It was absolutely insane hearing characters constantly go, hey, Lev, real cool back there. Good one. Hey, come with me, Lev. It's only a name that those closest to me call me. Like, my wife calls me Lev. Like, my sisters call me Lev.
My children.
Archie does call me Lev sometimes. So,
really?
Yeah. Because they repeat what they hear their parents say.
Yeah. I only call my father Sir.
My daughter calls me Homer.
Doll.
but it was crazy. Like, I really felt like I was playing. Well, maybe that's why I connected with the Abby story so much, was because she, like, literally would, like, you know, tell me to come with her, you know, congratulate me on killing people, like that kind of stuff throughout the game. She was protecting me. Lev, like, what a great character too. I was devastated when Yara died, but I loved that she was the one who killed Isaac as well. I loved that Isaac wasn't like a boss battle as well. Like, I thought,
I thought,
you know, if this was an Uncharted game, like, the boss battle would have been Isaac and then the leader of the cult, but instead it's just some fucked monster in a hospital and then Ellie.
Well, yeah, I was worried that, like, stuff would you'd get off the island and then the end of Abby's story would be fighting Isaac, and then as Ellie you would then fight Abby. But no, fuck. The game making the first encounter between Abby and Ellie, you having to play as Abby, is fucked.
So great.
Felt so bad to strangle. Like, anytime you're strangling the other playable character, I'm just like, stop it. Be friends.
Yeah.
But it's a fucked world out there, man. It's not our world. It's the Last of Us world.
It is the Last of Us world.
I can't wait. Last of Us world coming to Disneyland in 2025.
So, any final thoughts?
Yeah, sick game. Loved it.
Yeah. I really loved it. I'll play it again.
6.5 out of 10.
Yeah, absolutely 6.5 thumbs.
6.5 thumbs out of 5. Definitely. That's a big score.
Yeah.
So far it's definitely my game of the year, which I think, based on the rules of this podcast, is 10 thumbs, but I can't remember because all scores in video game stuff is meaningless.
I know that my brain will be too much of a dick to let this be my game of the year.
Yeah. Mr. Driller is going to be yours.
Seriously, watch that happen.
I'm holding out for the Mafia 1 remaster, dude. That's what I've pinned my entire 2020 on, is being reverted back to being a 12-year-old guy loving that game.
I think
mine will probably end up being like Paper Mario, or I'll go back and be like, actually, Doom was the sickest game.
I think for this kind of game, though, like, you know, the third person, first party, story-based action adventure, I don't think you get a better game than this. I don't think there has been a better version of this game, and this is going to be the one that influences all games moving forward. Like, watch God of War. Actually, like, I was going to say the God of War comparison. It was cool having Lev as your partner because it made me feel like Atreus in God of War again. I really wish you could have pushed Triangle to have Lev shoot arrows, though. That was like one of my favorite things in God of War, or Square, whatever it was. I definitely think we're going to see, like, disjointed narratives become a feature of a lot of these kind of games moving forward, because I think it is really effective in video games.
I reckon the first game you're going to see that happen will be Spider-Man Miles Morales.
Yeah, cool.
I think it'll be that Bugsnax game.
Hell yeah.
I love Gamer Alexi. It's so great. You're embracing it so much more. A year ago, there's no fucking way you would have known what Bugsnax was.
Dude, I sat and watched a press conference, dude. That's how I know this shit, okay?
Yeah, good game.
I love video game too.
I own Nightclub.
Levins, do you love video game?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, sick. Well, thanks so much for joining me on this Thumb Cramps adventure. I've been Joel.
Once again, I'm Alexi Toliopoulos.
I'm Levins.
And Alexi and Levins have separate podcasts that you should also listen to. Alexi is on Total Reboot, and Levins is on Hey Fam, and All the Small Games, and Serious Issues, and The Mitchin, which Alexi was on recently as well.
Good episode.
Alexi, I haven't missed any of your podcasts, have I?
We have Mic Check. That is occasional. Oh, we haven't done an episode for a month. And before that, 1 year. So it's still there. It's all about Mike Myers. And we will have something very exciting soon that we've been hinting about. But it is a bigger project that if you like it, when Cameron and I put our little investigator hats upon, you will enjoy something that will happen towards the end of the year.
Make Cam play Last of Us 2.
Cam has the last video game Cam played was the Rocky video game, which came out like 15 years ago. So I don't know. Cam has not played a video game in a really long time. I think that he would be really stressed and not enjoy this experience whatsoever.
He'll be making 50-minute-long YouTubes about why it's a bad game.
It's a bad game because it's not a movie or a TV show, the things that I like. I don't like that I have to use the remote control more often than I would in those situations.
Hey, thanks for listening. Do us a huge favor and leave a rating and review on whatever platform you're listening to this beautiful podcast on. Also, be sure to check out Sandspence Radio's objectively better gaming podcast, All the Small Games, hosted by Andrew Levins and John Valenzuela, two true professionals.